Speaking of Disney, Disneyland turns 63 years old next week. When the park opened its door on July 17, 1955, the world was, well, different. The Civil Rights Movement had just begun, and the U.S. had yet to enter the Vietnam War. I was only two. McDonald's had only just served its first burger, and California's food revolution was still two decades away. But even then, food was on Walt Disney's mind.
At the Plaza Inn, it was more of, in Walt's era, roast beef, roast lamb, mashed potatoes, potato salad, something called the Paul Bunyan platter, you know, with cold meats.
That's writer Marcy Carricker Smothers. She's the author of a fascinating culinary history of Disneyland. It's called Eat Like Walt, The Wonderful World of Disney Food. We've been talking about how Walt Disney intended food to be an essential part of the Disneyland experience. So let's talk about Walt. He appeared, despite what he created, to be a pretty simple guy, eating modest foods, things that he was really comfortable and familiar with. What else do we know about his eating habits?
Well, you really summarized it the best. Very simple, despite being one of the most famous men on the planet and could eat anywhere in the world and have private chefs cook him the finest food. As his daughter Diane Disney Miller noted, he grew up in an era where it was, you know, hash wagons and food wasn't very plentiful, and that sort of stuck with him the entire time. One of my favorite stories is when he took his crew to Westinghouse to pitch them to be a sponsor for the World's Fair. And they served lobster salad in the executive room. And as soon as Walt got out of there, he turned to everyone and said, "Well, that was a horrible lunch. Let's go get a hamburger and a milkshake," you know.
That's so funny. So that was really an age in which a lot of businesses had sponsorships. And in fact, the restaurants there were sponsored by some pretty big names. Talk to me a bit about that.
Well, in 1955, when Disneyland opened, Walt didn't have enough money or time or manpower to run, as he would call them, the feeding operations, you know, the restaurants, whether they be sit-down restaurants or counter, you know, takeout style. And so there were lessees, over 20 lessees for every single restaurant that was in the park. By 1965, Walt had pretty much taken them all back and owned them all himself.
That's insane.
It's insane. And he had this very clever caveat in the lease. You paid the first year and the fifth year in advance. So there was no way of skipping years 2, 3, 4. You had to pay the entire 5 years to get out of the lease.
So Coca-Cola, Stouffer's, Carnation, they knew when they got in that they were going to be kicked out eventually?
No. I mean, I don't think anyone knew. It was the best intentions, of course, to open the restaurants. It was just as Disneyland grew, that was Walt's aim to be able to run his own restaurants. And some of the lessees did stay after 1965, but one of the big ones was Red Wagon. So Swift's Red Wagon Inn, that was the restaurant that was on Main Street USA where the Plaza isn't today. 1965, Walt had taken it over and redesigned it, and now it is the Plaza Inn. As it stands now.
So let's talk about hot dogs. They were a favorite of Walt's. Can you share how hot dogs sort of factored into the whole sanitation blueprint of the park?
Yes, Walt loved his hot dogs plain, famously fed raw or uncooked hot dogs. We, of course, are cooked cold hot dogs to his dog. We'd walk in the back door, have a cold hot dog for his dog, cold hot dog for himself. When it came time to open the park, the way that hot dogs figure in is one of the most important foods at the park. In fact, Fantasyland was known as Hot Dog and Hamburger Land. It was just very simple foods on the go for families that were doing the kiddie rides. But Walt helped invent the trash can that we know now with the swinging door. And that's because he did not want guests to lift then, back in the day, the round aluminum lid and see inside all the garbage. And so that was one of the innovations that Walt brought to Disneyland. Where he used them, interestingly, is to pace off the distance about how long it took to eat a hot dog. That was his idea, as he would go from trash can to trash can so that a guest would have no excuse to drop a wrapper on the ground. So it'd start as hot dog at garbage can one, and then he'd stop where he finished his hot dog, and he would have the second garbage can placed right there.
It's a utopian dream. So the park has these four very distinctive lands, Adventureland, Fantasyland, Frontierland, and Tomorrowland.
And Main Street USA is a land, which a lot of people do not realize.
Oh, well, that makes sense that it's a land.
It is a land, and New Orleans Square, yes, right.
And how granular did he get on what was going to be served in each of these lands?
That is an interesting question, how granular. I cannot answer that because I have not spoken to Walt about it. But I do add that everybody in Eat Like Walt knew Walt, no exceptions. So there's no third-person accounts, even if I read interviews with people that work with Walt, like with Herb Ryman. So to answer your question, as best as I know, Main Street USA, for instance, the Sunkist, that was a lessee. Walt loved his oranges. He would famously break in to Sunkist on Main Street USA before the park opened to squeeze his own orange juice. He took great delight in using the, you know, then pretty novel automatic squeezing machines. He'd leave money on the counter and he'd leave. But that was considered breaking in, you know, air quotes, because he didn't own that restaurant. Sunkist did. And Carnation Cafe, he used to go there quite a bit and he used to like sit in the back of the restaurant. But if I had to pick one that was really Walt, I would say it would be the Red Wagon Inn and then the Plaza Inn, because the Red Wagon Inn was a sit-down restaurant. It was a distinctly different idea. It was for families to enjoy fine dining together when they weren't on the go trying to rush from attraction to attraction, and he ate there very often.
Club 33 is this sort of famed ninja dining experience. At Disneyland, it's the one that people really want to get into, the Uber VIP. What do we know about its initial development?
Well, we know quite a bit, thanks to the archives and talking with people like Jim Cora, who I call him affectionately my intern. He worked with Walt since 1957. We talk two or three times a week. So Club 33 was the idea that Walt had. He wanted to have a place where he could entertain people, potential sponsors for Walt Disney World, and also to thank his special guests and VIPs. And it was planned to be above the Pirates of the Caribbean, adjacent to his second apartment. His first apartment is over the firehouse in Main Street, USA. He was building a much grander apartment above Pirates of the Caribbean. You can still see the W and the R in the wrought iron on the second floor of veranda above where they sell the gumbo. And there would be a kitchen that would be shared with Club 33, Walt's private club. So back, what is this mystique about Club 33? Well, it has a very exclusive list of members. It's got a very long waiting list. It's expensive to join. And it is the only place in Disneyland that served alcohol, which, interestingly, at first Walt wasn't going to do. He wasn't going to have it available to everybody, but he was convinced again because of the entertaining people that he would have to have alcohol. Disneyland was intended, of course, to be an alcohol-free park from the beginning. The other thing was he didn't want to have paper napkins in Club 33, like the rest of the park. It was going to be cloth napkins, elegant service, continental-type dining. Now, the fun thing about Club 33 is that there's a lot of speculation about where the name came from. And geeks like myself have scurried for years to try to understand it. I know what's not true. It's not true that 33 was the number of lessees when Walt opened Disneyland. That's not true. It's not true, as I understand it, that it was to get a liquor license, because to have a liquor license with ABC, you have to have a physical address. There weren't many addresses, still aren't, at Disneyland outside of Main Street, USA, but there are those in the New Orleans Square. The other one that is true, but probably not the reason that he named it Club 33, was there were 33 lessees at the time that New Orleans Square opened. And I got that firsthand information from the aforementioned Jim Cora, who worked at Retlaw, which, by the way, is Walter backwards. And that was a company that Walt owned all of the things himself, such as the monorail, the trains, the Walt Disney Santana Tiki Room before he sold it back to Disneyland. So Retlaw employees were told, Jim read the memo, it's for the 33 lessees at the time of Newland Square's opening. However, the mercenaries' intel from Walt Disney's family and speculation, but I think it's a really good guess, is that 33 is in fact for Diane Disney Miller's birth year.
Oh, that would make total sense. That,
and yes, and so Walt loved numbers.
What is your favorite food there?
I just can't pick one. My favorite now, because it would be, I love Bengal barbecue in Adventureland across from Indiana Jones and the Temple of the Doom. I love the veggie kebabs and the chicken kebabs. But I also really do like the fried chicken at the Plaza Inn, and I like sitting at table 13. And another fun fact is that the Walt wanted to have bird cages with live birds in the restaurant. And the hooks were installed until they found out from the health department in 1965 that's a no-fly zone. So in homage to Walt, those hooks are still there. And occasionally they hang bird cages with faux birds in them. But I would say that now, if I had to pick one thing, it might not be my favorite food, but it's that combination of eating, of course, and dining isn't just what you're eating, it's who you're with and where you are. Now that Walt's train has been extended along the backs of the River of America, I would say the Hungry Bear restaurant on the second floor, where you can see Walt's train You can see his riverboat and you can see his Columbia sailing on the rivers of America with a cheeseburger with a lettuce wrap. Preference, no allergy, which is a real fun fact at Disneyland. Because if you say, I would want corn tortillas instead of flour or lettuce instead of a bun, they will ask you preference or allergy. They take gluten-free very seriously and they have a separate kitchen to go retrieve. So you have to say preference because otherwise you're going to wait. Like if it is a preference, you might wait a long time.
So fascinating. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I've been talking with food and wine expert Marcy Carricker-Smothers about her culinary history of Disneyland. It's called Eat Like Walt, The Wonderful World of Disney Food.